Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. Welcome out to us. For those of you just joining us, we're going to have a heck of an August around here as the Ravens get going. Luke will be out in Owings Mills. We'll be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour into August as well, a little later on in the month. I just got confirmation from Angela Alser Brooks. That's going to happen in September now. Down at State Fair, we're going to be at Fadley's. I'm wearing my Fadley shirt later in the month when the Cheatstros come to town. And in the meantime, at some point, Luke Jones will rest. I don't know when that will be. It's been an exhaustive week. For those of you who watch Luke out on the internet, you'll see the bags under his eyes. Feels like a Barney Rubble with toothpicks. What's going on, man? Lots of players, right? I mean, lots of movement. And yet, I'm watching MLB Network. The Orioles are getting killed about the bullpen. I'm reading stuff and I'm seeing stuff. I don't know exactly where you are. I think for me, I don't want to process these things at 5:20 on trade night and say what they've done, where they, and then they get a relief pitcher 10 minutes later, right? So in the totality of all of it, there was a lot of movement, I'll say that. And not if I were writing a column on it this morning, I would say what you see is what you get, much like Eric DaCosta and Ozzie Newsome, because we're trying to figure out Elias. He's only been here 5 minutes. This is the first time he's had this sort of opportunity to make these kinds of deals and a real owner legitimately, right? Different situation. I look at it and I say the bullpen thing and all the things we talked about, but for him, there was just a lot of movement, but you weren't touching Holiday. You weren't touching Mayo. You weren't getting anybody top shelf. Stowers was never going to make it here. Norby had no place here, despite what happened on Monday. And he wound up dealing spare parts.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those deals where you made a lot of moves. You definitely changed the makeup of the ball club. I mean, not drastically. You know, they didn't change foundational pieces, to your point, and all of that, although Connor Norby had been on the 26-man roster. But you see a flurry of moves. I think, by and large, people liked what they did last Friday when they brought in Eflin and Sir Anthony Dominguez. You know, Christian Pache was more of the throw-in piece there. I'm still not sure he's going to be on the 26-man roster. I don't know if him or Austin Slater, I don't know how that really works. I could easily see one of those guys or even both of those guys being outrighted to Norfolk before it's all said and done. But you look at these moves and you just say, how much impact are they really going to make? I think Zach Eflin very clearly provided an upgrade as a number three starter. And that's important, right? I mean, that's someone that is going to start a playoff game. You know, it's going to start game three of the divisional round, the ALCS, World Series, if you get that far. So clearly you can see the impact there and also the 2025 factor that we talked about as well.
I would say they use that deal to replace Bradish. Like that's in their minds, this is the replacement, costlier, but Bradish would have cost him a lot of money next year in arbitration had he gone out and won 18 games this year and been that guy, right? He would have been an $18 million pitcher next year. But I would say for them, that was – and I know we always do this with the Ravens too. When they draft for Ed Reed, we're like, there you go. And we draft for another player, but they needed to fill that spot. And there's some, he brings credibility.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the Eflin move. I mean, and I hadn't mentioned him a lot because obviously there was so much focus on Crochet and Tarek Skubal. And most recently, Blake Snell. By the way, none of those guys ultimately dealt. So I think you look at Eflin, and we can debate a couple of the other starting pitchers that were dealt. I think the Flaherty thing was interesting with the report coming out late Tuesday night that the Yankees actually backed out because they were concerned about the medicals. So I think Eflin was as well as you could do in terms of if you weren't willing to give up your prime guys. And boy, the way the market played out, you would have to given up all of those prospects.
Well,
to...
but Elias saw the market and saw these guys weren't going to be dealt. And they're waiting for me to give them Mayo or give them Holiday, and I'm not going to do it. So he took the best deal he could take early on. Elias read the market that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no question about that because he got a guy that we're sitting here on Monday morning after it's all over with and saying, well, they did as well as anybody did as far as getting a starter to make impact without giving away half their team. on Norby and Stowers after seeing tastes of them over the period? I mean, they may go and be fine and, play and maybe beat us, one night at Tropicana Field, but I'm very, very fine with it. And I'll say this. It's grown-up baseball to take on $18 million. This is what organizations do. They think about next year while trying to win this year. All of these things, they don't go all in because there is no all in. And then you got these teams like San Francisco, this esoteric thing we've never had to worry about here since Mr. McPhail had that chat with Mr. Angelos about luxury tax and being one of the teams that's threshold or not. Threshold was the word. I mean, sometimes I think you and I get nerdy and I bring Mari Brown around and I bring, valuation experts in to talk about the franchise and where it is and where the money is and how we're going to pay Rutschman and how we're going to pay Holiday and how we're going to pay Henderson. And then I put on an hour of Major League Baseball Network, and there are real nerds there that, like, if you don't speak that language, if you're not speaking that language, you have no idea why the Giants had half a sell-off.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely that part of it. I mean, the Orioles aren't in that realm, but to your point, not just with
But they can
Eflin, but
benefit from it by dealing with somebody who is and get and saying, oh, you don't want to pay that guy anymore because you need to get under your threshold. We'll take him. We need a pitcher.
sure. I mean, the Orioles did that. I mean, I think Eloy Jimenez from the White Sox, who's having a bad year. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not doing cartwheels about that deal,
Who is
but
that?
well. Go look at his offensive numbers in the previous 4 years, and they said, okay, we'll take on someone. They took on some money. Again, is he going to make a major impact? Probably not, but
Taking
I
on
can.
money for somebody that's not making a major impact. I mean, dude, I got to stop you in your track. Hey, that Angelos has owned this team. They don't do that. And that's why I looked at it. I'm like, it's more like a Yankee move in case Aaron Judge hurts his back or so. I'm looking at it and I'm like, where's he going to get at bats here?
I mean, I think there is a possibility for at bats for him, but I think it's going to be in a specialized role. The name that I thought of, which I think will make some Orioles fans nostalgic, at least for the Buck Showalter era, to me, it feels like it has the potential to be a Delmon Young kind of move. And what I mean by that is pinch hitter off the bench. Delmon Young was their primary DH against left-handed starters at that point in time. And I mean, it's. Michael Elias said it on the Masson telecast, which I just heard some bits and pieces of because I was at the ballpark. But he said, "Hey, we're going to see if we can get Eloy on a heater for a couple months." I mean, they have a couple team options. They're very unlikely to exercise because they're expensive. And again, he's not having a good year, but he had a pretty good year last year. Go back and look at what he did in 19 and 20 and 21. I mean, this guy's got some power potential and can help them against
So
some
he
left hand.
replaces Austin Hayes, sort of, kind of.
No,
No.
because he's not going to play outfield at all. I mean, he's a DH. He's that's why I said he's Delmon Young. I mean, he's DH slash pinch hitter. So
What does that mean for Mountcastle? What does that mean? O'Hearn's going to be left. I mean, lefty righty matchups. I just looked at it and I thought Geronimo Baroa, honestly. You know what I mean? That's what I thought, but I'm old school like that.
yeah, well, that's why I use the Delmon Young comparison. I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and say that he's going to get everyday starts, nor should he. He's batting 240 and has a 642 OPS this year. But as recently as last year, 23 doubles, 18 home runs in 120 games, had a 758 OPS, had an 858 OPS 2 years ago. So you don't want him playing defense. Like I said, this is a very specialized player, and they got him for basically nothing. They gave up Trey McGuff, who was not a prospect, more an organizational arm. Really, they just basically took some money off the White Sox hands. I mean, that's what it is. So I don't think it's even a case where he's guaranteed of playing all that much. Like I said, I don't think he's going to be an everyday player by any stretch of the imagination because he's a DH, and I think he matches up against left-handed pitching. So I think he's a specialized DH, and I think he's a pinch hitter off the bench. Not going to say I love the move, but I can at least see where they're coming from because they have struggled against left-handed starters over the last, month or two compared to where they
And
were
I
earlier in
see
the year.
that, and I see it from a baseball perspective, from like a stratomatic perspective, and saying,
Yeah.
I'd like to have that in my golf bag in case I need it. That's great. But how much money they paid for it, that's new world here.
Yeah, it is. But
I mean, last
we.
year we took on a Yankees guy because they were paying him.
Right, exactly. I mean, and that's why I'm not going to sit here and make a big deal out of it, but it does very much represent a shift in where they're going. I mean, these, you know, they're not taking on crazy long-term deals or anything like that, but it's a case where they feel Eloy Jimenez might be able to get hot and look more like the hitter he was the last few years. And in that case, he'd be a really nice weapon off the bench for them come September and October.
Is he a
But
better player right now than Couser or Kerstad? Not upside, not how much money he costs.
no.
I'm talking about, do you want him in the lineup tonight instead of that? That's why when I saw it, I'm like, they got Santander, they have Mountcastle.
Well, you need bench players. He's a bench player. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, he doesn't play the outfield. He's a DH.
But a
I think
limited guy on the bench seems really strange in the whole
it
Orioles
does.
Brandon Hyde mojo. You know, when you have the Mateos and the Uriases that are Swiss Army knives, and even Westberg's a Swiss Army knife to some degree. They hope that Mayo could at least play third base in a pinch, right? You know, they got guys that can move around and play multiple positions and all that. This feels like something out of character. I don't, we're spending a lot of
Yeah.
time talking about Eloy Jimenez, but we haven't gotten to the pitching or the relief pitching or what the Padres did or what anybody in baseball did. But it's curious. You
Yeah.
know, we're talking a lot about it because it's a little weird.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Nestor. I'm not sitting here saying that I love the move. I'm trying to rationalize the move. And Delman Young is about the best comp I can come up with as far as a recent Orioles team that I'll say this because you just asked me about Mountcastle and some of the other guys. I would venture to guess that this might have more of an impact on Kobe Mayo's status coming up and being part of the major league club. They don't play the same position, but in terms of what I would envision Kobe Mayo's potential role being, because we know, and we haven't mentioned this, and this might be the most impactful move of anything coming out of Tuesday's moves anyway. Jackson Holliday's on his way back to the major leagues and is going to be presumably their primary second baseman moving forward. So, you know what that means for Mayo? You know, I think Mayo probably now becomes more of a guy for September because I don't think you're moving on from Ramon Urias at least until Jorge Mateo's back in the picture. So you start to look at it and you start to count roster spots. That's where I haven't even gotten into the Austin Slater acquisition. It's like, wait a second, didn't you just get Christian Pache to kind of be your defensive fifth outfielder? You know, what does this mean for Heston Kerstad? So some of this, and I even wrote this at BaltimorePositive.com late Tuesday night, some of this we need to let the roster dust settle because some of these guys haven't reported yet. What's it going to look like? Who's being optioned? All those things.
It's a
It's
curious
definitely,
period right now.
it
We're
is. It
curious. Yeah.
really is. I mean, we know the roster's changed. I think the bullpen is much easier to figure out. I think the rotation, we'll get to Trevor Rogers in just a moment. The rotation is pretty easy to figure out, regardless of how you feel about it. But I think the position players, you know, the 13 position players you're going to have on your roster, I'm having a tough time figuring out what that looks like exactly.
James
Unless you're,
McCann's got to be on it. I ain't said his name
oh my
all
God.
week, but
And I know, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because
we haven't
my
brought him his flowers
apologies.
or his bandages or
My
his medication.
apologies. We were so focused on the trade deadline when you and I reconvened Tuesday morning to kind of talk about Monday's doubleheader and everything going on with the deadline that we did not even mention James McCann's name. So my bad on that because I said it as we talked to him after game one, but before the nightcap and the rain delay on Monday, that I now know what it's like to interview a prize fighter after a boxing match because that's what it felt like. Because I mean, gauze and packing up in his nose,
It
his
was
left eye
gruesome,
was
dude.
swollen shut.
Yeah, it
I
was very
mean,
hockey. It was very hockey. I covered a lot of hockey.
you saw Tyler Wells's tweet, I hope, right? Tyler Wells made the comment of the gist of it was, I've never met anyone tougher than James McCann on a baseball field. And I'd like to say that he's someone that I'd be in the bunker or with, but he'd have no use for me because he's that tough and I'm not nearly that tough. And I just thought it was a really interesting little note that he threw out there. But no, to get back to what this roster is going to look like with the addition of Austin Slater, Levan Soto, the infielder that came with him, they've already optioned him to Triple A. So I do wonder if, you know, when you talk about Slater, Soto, what happens with Christian Pache. I think some of that is going to be to backfill the Triple A Norfolk roster now that no longer has Kyle Stowers and no longer has Connor Norby if he was going to be optioned back to Triple A. So I'm still not quite sure exactly how that all is going to work. And to go back to Eloy Jimenez for a moment, I mean, it's just I see what you're thinking with him, but that's a really specialized role that, to your point, is not as versatile as their typical bench players. And again, that's why I'm kind of wondering about, okay, what's this mean for Heston Kerstad even? If they're planning on keeping a defensive-minded outfielder, which certainly Austin Slater or Christian Pache fit that mold at the very least, guys that can, defend and run a little bit. But, I'm just at this point, until we see what the moves look like, it's still a little more difficult for me to process it. But, the biggest move they made, other than Holiday being called back up, which isn't official until, before Wednesday afternoon's finale, but Trevor Rogers, another starting pitcher, someone who fills the back end of their rotation that even with the addition of Zach Eflin still had some questions. I think you and I and others have been talking about the preference to see Albert Suarez in a relief role moving forward, wondering what that looks like, whether you're talking about him replacing Cole Irvin, who was DFA'd on Tuesday in a long relief role, or even looking at him in a sense of, can he be a guy that maybe goes an inning or two, another Jacob Webb kind of guy for them that's a little more versatile. I think his arm is good. I think we've seen his arm hold up admirably as a starter, but I think we were wondering, is that sustainable for him and for where he is, the innings he's thrown this year, the fact that this is his first time being back in the majors in 7 years. I think there was a thought that, Suarez might be able to help you in the bullpen. Not saying he's going to become their closer, but I think I've used the comp that, I think back to when Tommy Hunter transitioned from
Seventh inning guy.
starter role. And, maybe pitches a little higher leverage if you're
Maybe gives
in
you
a
two and a third if you need it in the fifth, get you to the
maybe,
eighth.
maybe. Yeah. But at the very least,
On 4 days
he
rest,
becomes the.
he's good for that, I think.
Sure. And to me, that's going to be the question. Can he bounce back and pitch twice in 3 days or 3 times in 5 days if you need something like that? So, for now, he kind of looks like the long man. I mean, like I said, Cole Irvin was DFA'd. I think we could kind of see that coming, especially with the moves that they've made and just how much he struggled for close to what, 6 weeks,
Well, they got to
seven
be
weeks.
better. We talked about Rutschman hitting the ball. They all have to be better. The
Of
last
course.
month's not gonna get the horse. Last month, if they play like that, the next 2 months they might not make it to October. They might be one of the biggest disappointments there is if they miss the playoffs by a game because they're 15 games under 500 the next 2 months. Like, they can't do that.
Yeah, and I mean, they're not going to do that. I
Fair
mean,
enough.
even as bad as it's looked over the last 5 weeks, it's not like their record is, they're not like the White Sox, right? I
They
mean,
are perceived to be one of the three best teams in baseball.
sure.
Pick that they are. They just are.
All right. If not, even if not the best three, certainly the top five, right? I mean,
Well, and they also
they're
improved
firmly.
on Tuesday, as I see it. They got
Yeah.
better. Now, you and I are sitting here
How
talking about,
much?
like,
Right. How
but how
much?
much better and in what ways and what did they need to do and what's coming over the hill that we don't know about and how do they really feel about Couser? How do they really feel about Kerstad? How do they really feel about Holiday? How do they really feel about Mayo? Because the fans talk about these guys till they're blue in the face, but Rutschman's not hitting. Mullins hasn't been good. Different the defense hasn't been good. There's just been a lot of things that haven't been good the last couple of weeks that above and beyond Corbin Burnes, who's been fine, and Grayson, which we'll see on Wednesday afternoon. But the rest of it is a scramble, and it is for all the teams too. I mean, there's
Yeah.
nobody that walks out of Tuesday at 6 o'clock thinking we've won the World Series.
Well, and you get into trouble when you think like that, right? I mean, as I've said to you, even some of the all-time great trade deadline moves of the last 25 years did not net teams World Series necessarily. I mean, even some of the very best, talking about Sabathia going to the Brewers or Randy Johnson going to the Astros. I mean, you look at some of those and for every move that you do remember, like Justin Verlander going to the Astros, for example, you'll find other moves that either don't work out or they still don't get that team to the promised land because it's still a lot of variance, a lot of luck, a lot of who's getting right at the right or who's getting hot at the right time, that is still out of GM's hands, and out of manager's hands. And even the best players that move, they're still depending on their teammates. So they got better. How much better? How much impact are they going to receive from these moves? I think that's very much up for debate. I think if you were asking me to grade most of these moves, like I said, I really like the Eflin move. I think they got Sir Anthony Dominguez at a premium compared to what others ultimately paid for bullpen arms, and including what the Orioles paid for Gregory Soto, who is kind of a left-handed Sir Anthony Dominguez. You know, it's funny, the Orioles are kind of building the 2023 Phillies bullpen, which, if you ask my brother-in-law and Philadelphia fans, a lot of them would say that's not very good. So we're going to see how that plays out. But I think, you know, you can see what they tried to do here. I think with their starting rotation, they certainly stabilized it. We've talked about Eflin a lot. I think Trevor Rogers is, it's underwhelming when you see the sticker shock of having given up Kyle Stowers and Connor Norby. And by the way, I never answered your question about that. Look, I think Kyle Stowers has the potential to be an everyday outfielder in the major leagues. I think he's got the potential to be a 20, 25 home run guy. But let's also recognize that the Orioles have kind of shown you the last couple of years what they think about him in terms of how much they believe in him. And quite frankly, I'm guessing he would have been available for if another team had come calling saying, hey, we really, really want this guy. Here's our good reliever, or here's our number five starter or number four starter for him, or here's, you know, name what other need
His
the Orioles might
value's his
have.
value, and I would say the
I
same thing
think
for whatever Norby's upside is. That like we all love all our prospects are the
right.
best prospects. Yeah, okay.
Well, and
Until you take them out, and then other teams evaluate them, and
Keep in mind, I mean, I think you look around baseball for as much as this absolutely did play out in being a seller's market, how many top 100 prospects were moved across the game? I mean, and obviously not all the lists are consensus, right? I mean, Baseball America, MLB Pipeline, Baseball Prospectus, they all, The Athletic, they all have their top 100 lists, but very, very few guys that show up on those lists this year were moved. So yeah, the Orioles were willing to move a Connor Norby, who was, you know, a fringe top 100 guy. They were willing to move Kyle Stowers, who was blocked. I mean, he was blocked the last, for the better part of three seasons now, he's been blocked.
moving two guys whose upside's hitting 255 and being a major league player and being just a player is, I
I mean,
don't.
I think Norby has more upside in terms of, you know, I think the bat could play better, but I mean, Kyle Stowers was hitting 240 in Norfolk. Now, with power, with production, I'm not saying he's a bad player. I love Kyle Stowers, but I think where they stand and understanding what they're kind of looking for in their outfielders, I think they felt that they needed to do better than that. And Norby, I think the knock on him is going to be defense, right? I think his defense is looked okay at second base so far, but doesn't have a lot of versatility. In fact, the Marlins optioned him because what do they want him to do? They're actually going to teach him, they want him to learn third base. You know, they want him to become more versatile. I think they're eyeing him as not necessarily a starter, or not necessarily a bench player, but at least a starter that has the ability to move around the infield a little bit more. You know, he can play a little bit of corner outfield potentially as well. So, but when you look at some of the prices that we're getting, and we talked about this, we already talked about this the previous day with what the Astros paid to get Kikuchi from the Blue Jays, who is a rental, and a rental not even having a good season. I think I saw, I want to say it was one of the Baseball America guys actually said what the Orioles gave up to get Trevor Rogers, who also carries 2 years of club control, is comparable to what the Astros paid to get 2 months of Kikuchi. As you know, a left-handed starter that is going to be a free agent and has not been all that good. You know, Rogers has been really, you know, much better over his last nine starts. And I think for him, the Orioles, for them to give up what they did, even acknowledging what the market was, I think they see some tweaks they can make in Trevor Rogers to perhaps get him back to where he was in 2021, which was second in NL Rookie of the Year and was on the All-Star team. Now, Marlins rep and all that, I'm not saying he was amazing, but he had some pretty impressive numbers, and it's, you know, it's gone in the wrong direction ever since, which is makes it kind of puzzling why you would want someone who has a 4.5 ERA, you know, but at the same time, he's pitched consistently in terms of, you know, getting through five or six innings. and he does give you a higher floor, then let's face it, part of the Trevor Rogers acquisition is probably Cade Povich being as disappointing as he's been in the moment right now. That doesn't mean Cade Povich won't figure it out down
He's
the
not
line,
ready to
but
pitch in October in the big leagues.
well, I don't know if Trevor Rogers is going to pitch in October. I mean, he's your number five starter, right? I mean, it's going to be a debate of whether it's him or Dean Kramer, because you're going to have four starters in a postseason series. But we also need to remember, and part of these moves also goes into, they have 2 months left to go in the regular season. They're still trying to win the division. You still want to have enough stability in your starting rotation that you're not forced to go back to Albert Suarez or Cade Povich or Chase McDermott. Yeah, you want to be in a position where, okay, those are your what ifs. Now, if Grayson Rodriguez, heaven forbid, tweaks his hamstring covering first base on Wednesday afternoon and
By the
has to go
way,
on
you
the
mentioned all
IL.
these guys. These are all the guys that have contributed to 13 and 18 and whatever awfulness they're, the
Sure.
last 6 weeks is that you go out there on day three, day four, and day five, and you're sending some kid from Norfolk, Povich. You're sending sort of a KBO reclamation project out there whose arm's about to fall off and he's in his 30s. And you're sending Cole Irvin out there, and you
Yeah.
didn't even have Kramer until 3 weeks ago. So, like, this is about to change. We're about to see, they brought two very capable guys that are taking the ball every fifth day and looking at least as good as Dean Kramer.
Yeah. So I think the rotation is better. Now, is it what it would have been had Kyle Bradish and John Means stayed healthy? No, of course not. Right? I mean, that ship sailed though. Those guys are not walking through the door with healthy elbows. So you have to adjust. And the two pitchers that they've added in Eflin, who has more experience, higher floor, higher ceiling, although certainly not a high ceiling guy overall, but that's why he's a number three starter. And, Trevor Rogers, if the Orioles fail in making him any better than he's been the last couple of years, then he's a number five starter. He's not going to pitch in the postseason other than maybe a long relief role out of the bullpen. You've got 2 more years of club control, that he's another option. He basically replaces Cole Irvin, assuming Cole Irvin, maybe gets claimed by someone else or ends up being traded, whatever. So, I think it's a move that was panned very quickly by Orioles fans because of the sticker shock. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm doing cartwheels over Trevor Rogers by any stretch of the imagination. But when you start to break it down and you look at the club control, you look at what he was a few years ago, and knowing that the Orioles have been able to fix some pitchers, where they've John Means was the very first one that they turned into what became an above average starter for a couple years.
By the way, he's going to be more valuable than Stowers and Norby over the next 2 years because Norby wasn't
Sure.
going to play and Stowers wasn't going to play.
They were
And
going to
they
be
got a
bench
guy
guys.
that
Yeah.
if this time next year we're talking about him being a decent fourth starter or fifth starter for a team
Then
that won the World Series, of course, we have to talk like that,
Yeah.
or didn't win, either way,
Or still has a chance to win a year from now,
he's on
right?
the roster in May and will pitch 78 innings next year for the Orioles. And that's 78 more innings than Connor Norby was going to pitch, or 200 at bats he wasn't going to get, or blah, blah, blah. So, like, all the fanboy-ish in regard to the value of these guys, the value was out on the table, 6 o'clock on Tuesday. And it's exactly the way you and I would have put it together, which is to say, they showed you their hand. Stowers, Norby, these guys that had no future, that was what they were going to deal. They weren't going to deal anything
Yeah.
that's part of their steak that they're paying hamburger prices for a holiday. Anybody they see real upside. They see Mayo being Mountcastle for 5 years here and hitting 200 home runs here over the next 6 years, right? And not paying a lot to do it. That's the way they have to think about their assets.
Well, and on the flip side, you kind of got a glimpse of what the rest of Major League Baseball thinks of those guys. I mean, I'm guessing if someone else really wanted Norby more so than what the Marlins
They would
did,
have given
then
away a relief pitcher.
they might have gotten a better relief pitcher than what they ended up getting. Because you're always having multiple conversations with multiple executives pertaining to multiple players and multiple needs. I mean, this was a really busy trade deadline for
And
them,
also
obviously.
based only on your valuation,
Well, and
not
that's the
the
thing.
internet, not anybody else. This is Mike Elias's valuation of his organization and his players versus whomever he's dealing with. And if the A's say our closer's a Mayo or no, or we're not playing,
Yeah.
then you just hang up the phone and say, well, call me back when you'll take Stowers because
Well,
we're not dealing him.
and that's where you look at it and say, I mean, Mike Elias clearly wasn't willing to pay what the Padres ended up paying for a 2 month rental of Tanner Scott, which I understand that. I mean, if you look at that, you kind of look at what the Padres gave up for him. I mean, you're talking about the Orioles potentially giving up, having to give up, Heston Kerstad and more to get Tanner Scott. 2 months rental. I mean, you're kind of we're talking about the Andrew Miller thing all over again, right? So, I think if nothing else, and this applies to everyone, not just the Orioles and Mike Elias, I do wonder if we're going to start to see teams need to revisit how they do their roster building, understanding how expensive the trade deadline has gotten in terms of if you want to really go get an impact, something that's really impactful, boy, you're going to have to give up a lot. And
Do
we
it in
know that
December.
teams don't want to trade their prospects. So either do that in December via trade, or how about this? Spend some money on the free agent market. One, if I could lament one element of the Eflin deal, he's the kind of pitcher I wanted the Orioles to sign 2 off-seasons ago. The off-season when Eovaldi went to the Rangers, Eflin was signed by the Rays. The Orioles had finished 22 on a high note. They were going into 23 with at
So
least
instead of
expectation.
Gibson, you wanted Eflin. I got
Well,
you.
no, it would have been Eflin. It would have been Gibson and sign another pitcher along those lines. I mean, they were at a point where, look, they weren't spending any money at that point in time. Their payroll was nothing. I mean, it was even less than what it is right
And they didn't
now.
have to pay Rutschman and Henderson and knew
Well,
those guys were coming.
and the point is, I mean, I did mention Nathan Eovaldi 2 winters ago, and you saw what he did for the Texas Rangers last year. Now, would that have made the difference and the Orioles would have been the team winning the World Series then? Who knows? You never know. But the point is, they ended up needing an arm of that ilk, and they had to end up giving up minor league talent to do it. Which, look, things happen, and I'm not crushing Mike Elias over that. But the point is, and you're hoping some of these deals they made at the deadline moving forward are signs that there's going to be more of a willingness to do some of that. I'm not saying go out there and give out bad free agent contracts. Don't spend money foolishly. But if you have a very clear need or you have a very clear opportunity to upgrade something, if you go out and spend some money for it, you might not have to give up as much from a minor
But
league
the, it's
talent
it's
standpoint.
counter grow the bats by the arms. That doesn't even sound right. And the arms are expensive and fragile or fragile in this case. And look at Flaherty. I mean, just being an example. And look at the way even the Rays did business here to say, all right, we got a bunch of young talent. We feel like we need a hoss. We'll put a bunch of money out on the table. And if it doesn't work out, the Orioles will take the money. Somebody else will take it on.
Yeah.
If as long as his arm doesn't fall off, and we
Sure.
buy insurance for those things sometimes, but the Cardinals have made a living doing that, dealing, signing a third or fourth starter and saying if it works out, great. If not, we'll deal them off. I mean, because they had the money to do that, or felt like we don't feel like the Rays have the money, but that's not bad baseball either, is signing credible players and then third year of the deal, finding somebody to take the last $40 million off your hands.
Yeah, or in a case of you say, well, we'll get rid of this guy 1 year early and we'll recover some assets in return, rather than just letting him walk and, being in that other than the select group that gets a qualifying offer, you're not going to get anything in terms of compensation then. So, I mean, we'll get to the bullpen because,
That's a whole thing.
yeah, I think that's a segment in and of itself because they've improved their rotation. Now, did they add Garrett Crochet? No. Did they add Tarik Skubal? No. Did they add Blake Snell? No. But guess what? The Yankees didn't either. Other teams in baseball didn't either. And that's where I look at Eflin
The
and say,
Dodgers
look,
added Jack Flaherty, and that would have been a punchline here.
well, I mean, it would have been in terms of perception. I'm not sure that that would have been a bad move necessarily. I mean, you're hoping Jack Flaherty pitches like how he's pitched for the Tigers this year, which is way better than he pitched for the Orioles last year. So, but in terms of perception, sure. I think even that move looks a little bit different because one thing that people said was, the Dodgers got him at the buzzer and they looked at that return compared to some of the other starting pitcher returns and they said, wow, Andrew Friedman and the Dodgers done it again. They go out and get someone that and they end up not even having to give up that much in terms of prospects. But I think that might have been a reflection of what happened with the Yankees. Maybe the Dodgers had some concerns about Flaherty physically and said, "Look, we're not going to give you, we're not going to give you what you're asking for, but we'll give you this."
And he's getting
And
cortisone shots on August 23rd, right?
He's, he's a rental, and if you don't trade him now, you're getting nothing for him. So here, take this. So that's why I said to you when we talked about this the other day, when sometimes there is a benefit to waiting until the buzzer, even if you're the buyer, because that team that's selling, as much as they're waiting for the best offer, if something doesn't go right and the market dries up in terms of buyers that are courting your guy, it can come down to you don't want to be stuck with that asset in your hand at 6:01 on
Well, the
Tuesday night.
buyer only
So
gets fleeced when he says yes.
I mean, it's so you know what we're going to see how it plays out. Again, I like the Eflin move. Rodgers is more in the fine category for me. I certainly wasn't outraged about it, but I think you just looked at the market dictated
Better
what the
than
prices
Suarez,
were.
better than Irvin, better than what they've
Hopefully,
had.
hopefully. I mean, I can't say that with certainty, Nestor. He might stink. I mean, he might. It has not trended well for him, and his velocity's gone down a little bit over the last year or two as well. I'm hoping the Orioles see someone that they feel they can make some tweaks to. And they can make him, middle of the rotation starter. We'll see. Austin Slater, Eloy Jimenez. Again, I'm a little more curious in terms of what that position player bench is going to look like. But we'll get to Gregory Soto. I have some thoughts on him. I have thoughts on Sir Anthony Dominguez. I have thoughts on whether they've done enough with their bullpen. And I've been banging the table about that since spring training. You know that. Did they do enough? We're going to get into that because I certainly have some thoughts and I will express how I feel about it.
I want to express to my mother and father that I'm really upset with them for not naming me Sir Nestor Aparicio. Sir Anthony Dominguez. Maybe I could be knighted in Dundalk. Who knows? Luke Jones is Baltimore Luke. He's out in Owings Mills. He's very sleepy. The Orioles are playing afternoon games, night games. We're traveling off to Cleveland. I drove 6 hours back from Cleveland this week, so plenty of things to talk about, including this delicious scone that Munch Bishop bought me at Lucky's Cafe in Tremont. I am Nestor. He is Luke. Trading deadline's over. Orioles ahead. We're doing a lot of football this week as well. Luke's out training camp. For those of you inquiring about the tech service, it's under repair. Hang on. We're improving things after 17 years trying to make things better. And I'll say that on the radio, and I'll put out a red flag on that for everybody before the month's over. But it's going to take me a couple weeks because the government's involved in people's text numbers. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore positive.